All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves tonight focusing on Parshas Vayigash. You know, I wasn't sure tonight. I figured I could still get away maybe this evening with one more Chanukah shir. But I figured that Emir Tashem, we're going to have so much to talk about in the Parsha, the focus on the Parsha. I just want to begin by thanking everyone for the beautifully generous Chanukah gift and for thanking Mrs. Haber for coordinating and really truly appreciate it. Absolutely unnecessary, as I always say. It's an incredible zechus, an incredible privilege to come here every week on Wednesday night. I come here more often than just Wednesday night, but it's a beautiful privilege to come and share Torah with this group every single Wednesday night. And Emir Tashem, we should be zochet to learn Torah together for many years to come. So let's begin with number one. V'lo yachol Yosef lihisapik l'chal ha'nitzavim alav. So remember again, to give us a little bit of context and orientation, so Parshas Vayigash continues the fact that Yosef is still hiding his identity from his brothers. So the brothers still have absolutely no idea who this viceroy, who this individual, not just individual, who this belligerent individual is. They have absolutely no idea why it is that Yosef is asking them all of these personal familial questions, why Yosef requires so many details, but nevertheless, they give him the answers that he requests. So remember again, at the beginning of Parshas Vayigash, Yehuda pretty much is at wit's end. Yosef is ready to incarcerate Binyamin. Yehuda realizes that he cannot go back to Yaakov without Binyamin. And essentially he says to Yosef, if I go back without my brother, my father will die. Forget about the fact that I have pledged my own life on the line. If I go back without our youngest brother, my father is as good as dead. So now the Torah records, V'la yochol Yosef l'is'apik l'chal nitzav malav. Yosef was no longer able to contain or restrain himself emotionally. Vayikra called out, Hotzia kol ish me'alai. Remove everyone from the chamber. V'lo amad ish ito behisvada Yosef alachav. And no one was with Yosef when Yosef revealed his true identity to his brothers. Vayitein as kolo b'vchi. He began to cry. Vayishmu mitzrayim vayishma b'isparo. And everyone heard the cries. Vayomer Yosef el Echav, and again the most dramatic statement Yosef said to his brothers, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, ha'od avichai, is my father still alive? V'lo yochlu Echav la'anoso so, ki nivhalu mipanav, and quite literally the brothers were unable to go ahead and answer him. The English translation over here is because they were startled by his presence. Nivhalu mipanav doesn't just mean startled, nivhalu means overwhelmed. They were simply overwhelmed by the enormity of the circumstances that they were just told, and they were rendered absolutely speechless. Vayomra Yosef al Echav, Yosef reaches out to his brothers, he says, Gishuna Eli, come close to me. Vaygosha, they came close. Vayomra Ani Yosef Achicha Masham Echartem Osi Mitzrayimah. I am Yosef, the one who you sold to Egypt. Va'ata al Te'atzvu, Va'ayichar Be'inechem Ki Mechartem Osi. You know, don't be upset that you sold me, ki lemichya shalachani Elohim lifneichem, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has sent me ahead of you to be able to provide materially for the family. So there's much to speak about in this section. There's much to speak about the nature of Yosef's revelation, Yosef's word choices in the revelation, Yosef's idea that he doesn't hold the brothers responsible for what happened to him, rather he simply sees them as the vehicles or the agents of the execution of divine will. But we're not going to focus on any of that. Instead, what I want to draw your attention to is one simple phrase, and I underlined it. Yosef, when he reveals himself to his brothers, says, Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avi Chai. Is my father still alive? And there's an obvious question, which is, why does Yosef need to ask this question? After all, again, remember, this charade has been already going on for a little while, right? We read about it all last week's parasha. And throughout the entire dialogue between Yosef and his brothers, even before, of course, before the brothers realize who Yosef is, who is often the subject of conversation between Yosef and his brothers? Yaakov Avinu. They've been talking about Yaakov over and over and over. In fact, just a couple of psukim earlier, at the end of last week's parasha, when the brothers come back a second time to purchase food, the first thing Yosef asked them is, Shlom Avichem, how is your elderly father doing? Just 2 minutes ago, a couple thousand years ago in the psukim, Yehuda told Yosef, if I don't bring back my brother, my father is going to die. So it's unequivocally clear that Yaakov Avinu is still alive. Why does Yosef have to ask the question, Ha'od Avichai? Or perhaps, to state a little bit differently, what was Yosef really asking when he said, is my father still alive? Question one. And the follow-up question to that is, and what's the take-home lesson for us? Because remember, as you've seen throughout our journey through Bereishis, the stories that are contained in Bereishis are not just included here for story's sake, for informational sake, but they're here. Each story that's included includes some type of moral, ethical lesson as part of it. So question number one is, what is Yosef asking when he says, or when he asks, Ha'od Avichai, is my father still alive? And question number two is, what is the lesson? What is the message for us? So, Emir Teshem, time permitting, we're going to go through five different interpretations. So we start with the simple one. The Medrash writes, Vayomer Yosef al Echav, Ani Yosef Ha'od Avichai, Betchila Sha'al Shlom Aviv. So the Medrash says, Ha'od Avichai does not have to mean, is my father still alive? But rather, it can mean, is my father healthy? I know that he's alive. You told me he's alive. Ha'od Avichai, is he living well? Is he okay? Is he bari? Is he healthy? Again, in number three, Rav Chaim Paltiora, it's the same idea. V'im tomar, ha'kvar amru l'mal shalom avdecha avinu odenu chai. V'nira li devada yoda decha. Yosef knew his father was alive. Achaya shoel im haya bari. He was asking ultimately again, is my father healthy? I'm sure my father has been through the ringer over these last 22 years, so I just want to see how is his health, how is he doing? Okay, so first, simple approach, totally no question. He's not asking his father's still alive. He's asking now, I know he's alive, how's his general health? Second approach. Number four, the Gsava Kabbalah, Rav Mecklenburg writes, Ha'od Avichai, Sha'alahem zeh, ki chashav ulai, masha'amru adhena sheyamos avihem biyagon. Now remember again, this entire time they're talking about their father, and remember, Yehuda, whenever he brings up Yaakov, always goes ahead and highlights the frailty of Yaakov Avinu's state. Remember again, just most notably the beginning of Parshas Vayigash, that again, he says, I have to go back with Binyamin, because if I don't bring Binyamin back, my father is going to die. So writes from Mecklenburg, Yosef thought that perhaps that which Yehuda always presents Yaakov in such a frail state, he says, Hoyekedei sheyasigu mivukasham ba'ashavas Binyamin ube'emes einenu chai ulazeh ratzal adasa emes. So Ksava Kabbalah writes that Yosef thought maybe Yehuda was lying. Maybe Yaakov wasn't really alive. Why would Yehuda be saying that Yaakov was alive if he wasn't? And a simple answer is, he's trying to play on Yosef's emotions. He wants him to release Binyamin. Earlier he wanted him to release Shimon. So Yosef, again, remember, Yosef doesn't know what to make of his brothers, as we'll see as we go on a little bit. But it's not, if they were willing to sell him as a slave, willing to throw him in a pit, almost ready to kill him, they might also be liars. It's quite possible, maybe even probable. So the fact that Yehuda has indicated that Yaakov is alive, says Ksava Kabbalah, is no indication that's absolute MS. It could very well be that Yaakov Avinu is dead. And in fact, Rav Hirsch writes that Ha'od Avichai, the way he translated is my father really still alive? I know you've told me he's alive, but is he really still alive? So in approach number two, we call this the veracity. Yosef, when he asks this question, is actually asking, I know you've told me he's alive, are you actually telling me the truth? So again, approach number one, he's inquiring about the general welfare. I know my father is alive, as evidenced by our previous conversation, but I want to know, is he healthy? Approach number two, I don't believe you when you say that he is alive. Maybe you were trying to play my emotions. Is he really alive? Approach number three. Again, Rav Chaim Paltiel, this is quite interesting. He says, Ani Yosef Ha'od Avichai, Inami, Simin Masra Lahem, Shehaya Yosef. Now, interesting, Rav Chaim Paltiel says, seems to go with the idea that Yosef is not asking about the welfare, and he's not asking to verify the fact that Yaakov Avinu is still alive. There's something else at play over here. He says, Kevan Shekara Yaakov Avi, Di'i Haya Mitzri, Lo Haya Kora Osa Avi. So Rav Chaim Paltiel writes the following. When Yosef divulges his identity, Ani Yosef, so remember again, how can he get his brothers to believe him? How could he get his brothers to actually believe that he is really Yosef? So Rav Chaim Paltiel writes, he does so by calling Yaakov Avi, by saying that Yaakov is my father, thereby saying that he is the son of a Hebrew, he is the son of an Ivri, he's not an Egyptian. Says Rav Chaim Paltiel, this is not something that an Egyptian viceroy would just say if it wasn't true. Why not? He says, "The Ihaya Mitzri, lo haya kora osavi," because if he really was an Egyptian, he would not be calling Yaakov his father. Ki gunus haya lo, because again, remember, the notion of an Egyptian professing paternity from a Hebrew would have been an incredible degradation. Ki gam lechem lo hayu ochla mitzrim ivrim, because remember, as we saw earlier, the Egyptians and the Hebrews did not even eat together. Kol shekein shelo hayu korin osa avihem. So therefore, the Chaim Paltiel says that Ha'od Avichai is a way that Yosef gives his brothers an assurance that it's really me. Because if it wasn't me, then why would I call Yaakov my father? Making such a statement runs the risk of what? Runs the risk of alienating me from my Egyptian counterparts. So so it's interesting, Chaim Paltiel is not focusing as much on the chai part. He doesn't see, not focusing on the alive part, he's focusing much more on the avi part. And ha'od avi chai is just almost like a statement, how is my father? But the important part is not, I know he's alive, I trust you that he's alive, I trust you that he's well, but what I'm trying to demonstrate to you is that I am your brother. How can I demonstrate to you that I am your brother? By professing that Yaakov, in fact, is my father. And along those same lines, if you look at number 7, I'm sorry? So we'll get to that. Good. So look what he writes. And so number 7, it told us Yitzchak writes the following. Same idea. Hatshuva she'im yomar miyad ani Yosef, achicha mashem achartem osi, yechashu shekavanoso lahargam. Now it's interesting, by the way, what the told us Yitzchak points out over here is, if you look at the way that Yosef phrases his revelation. So first he says, I am Yosef, is my father still alive? And then he goes ahead and says, I am Yosef, your brother, whom you sold down to Egypt. So the Tobas Yitzchak writes the following, that had Yosef begun by saying, I am Yosef, the brother who you sold down to Egypt, they would have thought that with an introduction like that, what's Yosef's plan? To take revenge. Therefore, ulazelu hiska mechira miyat. Therefore Yosef does not mention the sale immediately. Aval adirabai, just the opposite. Omro, im omrani Yosef, omar ha'oda vichai, lomar afilu esav harasha, lo omar larog la'achiv, ad sheyamos Yitzchak aviv, shalahorit es sevasa biyagon sheola. So this is so interesting. So Tovus Yitzchak says that Yosef realized that, you know, sometimes in life you have to have a difficult conversation with someone and you have to really script how that conversation is going to go. Because if you've ever had an important conversation with someone and you have not thought about how to script it, how does it generally go? Not well. Generally, it gets away from you and generally goes in directions that you don't want it to go. So Yosef realizes, here's what I have to be able to convey to my brothers. I have to convey to my brothers essentially three different things. Number one, that it's me, Yosef. Number two, that I mean them no harm. And number three, that this is all part of God's master plan. Here's the problem, that's a lot to swallow in one conversation. So to go ahead and indicate to them that I bear them no animosity, they're not going to believe that immediately. So what does he start to say to Tolos Yitzchak? Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef. Ha'od Avichai, is my father alive? Now, did he know that his father was alive? Yes, he knew his father was alive. By saying, essentially, again, a rhetorical question, is my father still alive? What he's saying is, you have nothing to fear. Because even if I did want to take revenge on you, I would not what? I would not do it now. Because even Esav, who was a Rasha, had enough Derech Eretz while his father was alive to what? To not do anything against Yaakov. So it's such an incredible insight here. Sometimes, you know, you have to, whenever you have to say something to someone, you know, like the Gemara says, the Pirkei Avos says, that you're not supposed to go out and be mafias. You're not supposed to appease someone, b'shas kas, so when they're angry. A person has to be receptive to certain words. To say, hey guys, great to see you, it's Yosef, and everything is hunky-dory, everything is wonderful, it's perfect, so happy you guys came.
they're not going to believe that message. So instead, what Yosef has to do is kind of break it to them slowly. I'm Yosef. I'm still alive. You're not in danger. You're not in danger. How do I say you're not in danger? Ha'od avicha, is my father still alive? Because I know he's alive. So just so you know, obviously, I don't want to do anything to exacerbate my father's pain. See, even if I don't like you guys, even if I want to take revenge on you, you're safe now because father is still alive. After he delivers that message, telling them of their safety, then he goes on to say what? I'm your brother. I harbor no ill will. This was not your plan. This was God's plan. He goes on slowly but surely afterwards, which is such an incredible lesson in terms of how to think before one speaks. That so often when we want to have important conversations, the truth is, you know, there's a beautiful, I once read a beautiful piece by Rav Pam. Rav Pam, Zech Tzadik Livracha, was Rosh Yeshiva of Tarva Das, and he said that the worst word in the English language, don't worry, this is a G-rated shiur, but the worst word in the English language is whatchamacallit. Why whatchamacallit? Rav Pam says, because if you're saying whatchamacallit, it means that you didn't properly think through what you need to say before you said it. And you should never, ever open your mouth without being unequivocally sure what it is that you have to say, the message you want to convey, and the words you want to use. Of course, this is a lost lesson in our current society, because again, with internet and blogs and Facebook, people have verbal diarrhea. And they just, like, if they think it, they write it and they put it out. And it's a machla, it's a terrible thing, because people don't think before they communicate. What the Torah is conveying to us over here is that if you have something important to convey to someone, think before you say it. Think how to say it. Don't just think about what words you want to use, but think very carefully about how those words are going to be heard and emotionally and intellectually ingested by the other. Once you weigh all of those things, first of all, if you go through this process, you'll find, we all find that what? You talk a lot less, which is a good thing. And also what we say is that much more impactful. So that's what's unfolding over here. Yosef is trying to go ahead and assure his brothers that he harbors no will against them. So according to the Reb Chaim Paltiel, by calling Yaakov his father in a public setting, now identifying as a Hebrew, by definition, he's aligning himself with his brothers. According to the Toldos Yitzchak, no, it's something much more profound. He realizes that to say to his brothers, I forgive you, everything is fine, I harbor no ill will, they're not going to believe that now. No one could believe that, because the truth is that level of forgiveness is superhuman. So let me start with a message that they can accept. What's the first message? I'm not going to kill you. Okay, I'm not going to kill you. Why? Because I don't want to do anything to my father. So let's start with that baseline. Once you know that your personal safety is guaranteed, then we could move on in the narrative a little bit, and I could tell you, I still identify as your brother. I still love you. I still care about you. I forgive you. I realize the hashkacha, the divine providence in all of this. But it has to begin, again, with a simple message that I'm assuring you that you are not in mortal danger. So again, so far the let's do one more approach, then we'll review. Look at number 8, fourth approach, what we call rebuke. The Sfarno writes, Ha'od Avichai, Efshar Shelo Meis Midagoso Alai. So according to this approach, again, this is not an interrogative, it's not a question. Yosef knows his father is alive, because again, at least he believes what their brothers told him, that Yaakov is still alive. But rather, what is he saying? This is a shtach, this is rebuke. Could it be that after everything that you put my father through, he's still alive? So it's a patch. It's a patch to the brothers. Do you know what you've done? Do you know the horror that you've visited upon our entire family for over 2 decades? Is it possible that despite the fact you broke our father's heart, that he's still alive? V'ksava Kabbalah, again, Rav Mecklenburg, again, number 9. Ha'od Avichai, V'efshar Shahahei, Hey Hatema. So this is the interrogative. Hey, im evsher hu sheyich ye'od avi Achar avru alav kalatzar al, is it possible again that my father is still alive after you guys have visited all of these saras upon him? So according to this approach, again, it's not an assurance. It's not checking out the veracity of the claims. It's not inquiring about the health or the welfare of Yaakov. It's a shtach. It's a patch to the brothers saying, what have you done? Did you ever think for a moment about the impact that your actions would have? Could it be that our elderly father hasn't died of a broken heart after all of these years? And if you look at number 10, the Beis Halevi takes this a step further. The Beis Halevi writes that there's actually a much more profound form of rebuke that's unfolding over here. The Beis Halevi, Rav Yosef Dov, Halevi Soloveitchik, writes the following. He says, Ani Yosef, in paragraph Aleph, we're not going to do all of this. He says, Hinei b'posuk zeh, Yesh, second line, Yesh l'sponi b'harbe. Beis Halevi writes, this pasuk requires a lot of investigation. Achar dahari, echad, dahari kol divrei Yehuda elah b'vikuchom Yosef, so first of all, which is the question we're going to focus on, which is why does Yosef ask if my father is still alive, when at the end of the day, Yehuda's entire argument to release Binyamin was all about the pain that it will cause his father. Obviously, his father is alive. So skip down to paragraph base. But Medrash Rabbi quotes an amazing Medrash. The Medrash writes, Isa posik zeh, Amar Abba Koin Bardala. So Abba Koin Bardala said, Oy lanu miyomadin, oy lanu miyomatalchacha. Woe to us from the day of judgment, woe to us from the day of rebuke. What does this mean? Yosef katnun shel shvatim. Yosef was the youngest of the tribes. Lo yochlu echav la'anos oso. Ki nivhalu mipanav. When Yosef says, "Ani Yosef ha'oda vichay," I am Yosef. Is my father? Is my brother? Is my father still alive? So what does the Torah say? For lo yochlu echav la'anos oso. The brothers were unable to respond. They couldn't say anything. So Yosef, who was the youngest of the tribes, and yet what? When he confronts his brothers with this reality, I am Yosef, is my father still alive? The brothers can't say anything. So look what Rabbi Abba Koin Bardala says, L'chishiyavu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'yochiyach l'cho echa l'fi mashu ne'mar, O'chichacha, V'echo le'enecha alachas kama v'kama. All the more so after 120, when we go up to Shemayim for Din V'cheshbon, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to confront, God is going to confront each of us with the enormity of our deeds, how speechless we are going to be. This is a very, it's a very overwhelming medrash, right? Because again, what the medrash is saying is, if the brothers could not answer Yosef, when Yosef, remember again, when Yosef says, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, even though he wasn't saying, what have you done? That question, I'm Yosef, I'm still here, which means, how can you account for everything you've done? And the brothers can't answer. So Abba Koin Bardala says that after 120, we're going to have a similar experience. We come before judgment for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is going to confront us with the reality of our deeds. And so too, we will have no answer for some of the things we've done in life. So the Beis Halevi writes, Ukvar dibru rabim levar zeh medrash karnaso. Many have tried to explain this medrash. Gam yesh lahavin, ma tochacha shehaya kan la'ashvatim, rak nifalu me'adaha pit'omis. So let me tell you that some of this Beis Halevi outside. See, he writes, actually skip down to Gimel. Ve'eis asher nira bezeh, da medrash mefarish, the pasuk zeh, lo amru Yosef begeder pios le'achav klal. So the Beis Halevi says, I disagree with the previously mentioned opinions who say that Yosef was trying to appease and draw his brothers closer. No. Ani Yosef ha'oda vichai is rebuke. But what kind of rebuke? V'teida, da'achakach ba'aposak ha'sheni, achar shenifalo mipanav, amar lam shenis ani Yosef achichem. So the Beis Halevi points out that the appeasing comes a little bit later. Skip down to paragraph Dalet. Uvegam mash amar lahem ha'oda vichai, when he asks, is my father still alive? That's not really a question. There's no need to ask that question. He already knows that Yaakov is alive. So what's happening? Paragraph Hey. So the Beis Halevi says something absolutely amazing. The Beis Halevi says in that one little phrase is such an incredible refutation and rebuke of everything the brothers said, of everything Yehuda said. Because what did Yehuda say? The whole idea is that when Yehuda is confronted with the fact that Binyamin is going to be taken as captive from Yosef. So what does Yehuda say? What does Yehuda say? I didn't put on your sheep. What does Yehuda say? How can I possibly go back to my father without Binyamin? It's going to break his heart. And Yosef says back to Yehuda, Ani Yosef, ha'od avichai, you hypocrite. You hypocrite. You're suddenly so concerned with my father's welfare. Why weren't you concerned about my father's welfare 22 years ago? Why weren't you concerned? You knew that my father loved me. He gave me the Kisaras HaPasim. You know that I was the apple of his eye. You know that I was the primary remnant of his beloved Rachel. Remember again, as much as Yosef and Binyamin were both from Rachel, but it was Yosef that symbolized Yaakov Avinu's love for Rachel. Why not Binyamin? Why? Remember, we spoke about this 3 years ago, right? Because again, remember, Rachel Imenu dies in childbirth with Binyamin, which means that every single time Yaakov Avinu looked at his youngest son, he realized that his life, Binyamin's life, came at the expense of my beloved Rachel. That is not an easy thing to live with, and it's not an easy relationship to forge and to nurture. But Yosef, to Yaakov Avinu, represented when life was perfect. Right? As perfect as life gets. He had his beloved Rachel. They finally had a child together. He realized that this son, Yosef, was something special. Yosef was literally the apple of his eye. So Yosef is sitting there listening to Yehuda cry about the fact that if Binyamin doesn't come back home, Yaakov Avinu is going to die. And Yosef, without saying these words, by simply saying, Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avichai, you're claiming my father would die of a broken heart without Binyamin. But tell me, did he die of a broken heart when I wasn't there? Did you think about the impact of my absence? Did you think about what you would be doing to our father? So says the Beis Halevi, Yosef is rebuking his brothers, he's rebuking Yehuda specifically, but all the brothers by extension, with the most intense type of rebuke, which is calling them hypocritical. Don't tell me that you are so concerned with our father when 22 years ago you didn't exhibit one shred of concern. And skip down a little bit in paragraph Hey. He says, D'chol tanos of Shal Yehuda, V'tchol Shal Yehuda haya mitzaro Shal Yaakov shigrom ablikachs. Actually, skip down paragraph to paragraph Vav. He says, U'lamashal. So remember, what does the Medrash say? Let's go back for just a moment. Hear this outside. So the Medrash says that the same way that Yosef confronted his brothers. Now the Beis Levi says this is not just a confrontation. What was it? He was confronting their hypocrisy. Don't pretend like you care about our father when your actions clearly indicate that you don't. So the Medrash says, my gosh, if the brothers were not able to answer Yosef, who was the youngest of the Shvatim, what's going to happen to us after 120? Remember, the Medrash says two things. When we have to reach out, when we have to face God, biyom adin, on the day of judgment, ubiyom ha'ochacha, and the day of rebuke. So what's the difference between judgment and rebuke? So look at the Beis Halevi says. He says, if you look at the last two lines of paragraph A, he says, diktik va'amr lefi mashu gam yom adin, yatochacha l'chol echad mimasav amasav, v'yumasav nitpasi masav. So the Beis Halevi says, din, there's judgment. We all have to stand judgment. Hochacha, rebuke, says the Beis Halevi, is that after 120, one of the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls us to task for is not as much our sins, because we're human beings. What does God call us to task for, really? Hypocrisy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could forgive sin, because He created us with all our human frailties. One thing that God has a very low threshold for is human hypocrisy. See, He says, Ulamashal, Misha'ino, paragraph Vav, Misha'ino no sin tzedaka, sover bida'ato sheyesh lo teretz kovet v'docha karparnasa, v'ribo ya'etztarcho shalachrach yosim de'beso, ad she'in b'kocho lefa'azal achirim. So he gives a simple example. A person is not charitable. A person doesn't give tzedaka. So a person says, look, it's not because I don't want to give tzedaka. It's because I have responsibilities, I have bills, I have all these different things I have to do. Truth is legitimate concern. What's the problem? The problem is, if you skip down to paragraph Zion, he says, Omnam, maru lo mimasav, asher b'mokum acher, pizer harbi mamon, avur davar she'ino hagun. However, here's the problem. After 120, if a person says, I didn't give tzedakah, what was I supposed to do? You know, yeshiva is expensive, day school is expensive, being Jewish is expensive. It costs me a lot of money. So I didn't have a lot of money. Okay. But then again, comes out the spreadsheet of all of the things yet I did find money for, right? So suddenly again, what about all the entertainment? What about all the extracurricular? What about all the stuff that I bought that perhaps were not necessities? So I don't understand, it doesn't shtim, as they say, right? It doesn't quite seem to balance out. You're telling me you had no money for tzedakah. I could accept that. Sometimes things are tight, a person can't give, even though everybody's supposed to give in accordance with their means, but yet you had money for this other stuff. And by the way, tzedakah is just one example of this. You could plug this into anything. How many times are there so many beautiful opportunities for chesed? So many beautiful opportunities to help out, whether it's in a shul, in a community, any organizations, and yet what? What do we say? Right? No time. But amazing how we find time for all the things that we actually want to do. Right? Amazing how we find the time for the recreational things that we enjoy, or to schmooze, or to do this, or to do that. There's no time to do this, but Sfeibon Shalom says, interesting, that's what happens after 120. What Yosef was confronting his brothers with was the hypocrisy. You know, you want to say that you sold me because you hated me. I accept that, because it's honest. You did hate me. You thought I was a terrible guy for all these reasons. But don't play the we care about our father card, because that is sheker. That is an absolute falsehood, and it's absolutely hypocritical. Because if you truly cared about our father, then you would have never done what you did to me 22 years ago. So what Yosef says, basically, what Yosef is calling them out on is not the fact that they sold him. He's calling them out on their hypocrisy. And says the Beis HaLevi, the Medrash says that, you know what the entire lesson of this story is? The entire lesson of this story is to avoid sin is exceptionally difficult. I'm sure there are some among us who are able to do that. Most of us can't do that. We can't avoid sin. We try to minimize the number of sinful events we engage in. But the one thing ultimately we have to try to avoid at all costs is hypocrisy. Is being hypocritical individuals, because that's a fundamental pagam, that is a fundamental blemish in the identity of the individual. Avoidance of sin in the absolute, virtually impossible in this world. But avoidance of hypocrisy, living a double life, that is something, saying one thing, but acting or behaving in another way, that's something we must absolutely try to avoid with all of our koach. So what comes out? Yes?
Did they ever have Hanukkah?
Next week. We'll see that. It's a very, very interesting point. We're gonna focus on that in Parshas Vayechi, because this story is difficult to wrap your head around on so many levels, for the one simple reason that it's lacking closure on so many different levels. One of them is going to be the profound sadness or sorrow of the brothers. Did they have it? Did they ever regret it? Did they have remorse or not? That we'll see. Next week. So now, again, so if we just bring everything together, so we have our first four approaches. Remember, we have a very simple question tonight, which is, why is Yosef asking Ha'od Avichai if at the end of the day they've been talking about his father all of this time? So remember, approach number one is he's not asking if his father is alive. What is he asking? My father's health. How is my father's health? He must be an old man by now. How is he doing? Approach number two, no, he doesn't believe them. They could very well be lying about Yaakov to play on his heartstrings, to play on Yosef's heartstrings. So now he's checking out the veracity of the claim. You said he's alive, is he really alive? Third approach, Ha'od Avichai, is a way of Yosef assuring the brothers that he has no ill intentions toward them, either by positively identifying as the son of Yaakov, or according to what the Toldos Yitzchak, by saying ultimately, again, if our father is alive, therefore by definition I'm not going to do anything to you. Because as long as our father is alive, which also, by the way, interestingly enough, fits in very beautifully in next week's parasha, because after Yaakov dies, the brothers for some reason now become absolutely fearful that what? That Yosef's going to take his revenge. So it makes sense according to the Toldos Yitzchak, because here he just assured them, look, dad is alive, you guys are safe. Either way, it's an assurance. And approach number four, it's a rebuke. Either a rebuke is saying, after everything you've done to our father, Is it possible that he's still alive? According to the Beis Halevi, Yosef is rebuking them for their hypocrisy. Don't tell me that you are concerned for our father when you didn't have a shred of concern for him 22 years ago. And the lesson for us being that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could forgive sin. The Ribbono Shel Olam has a much more difficult time overlooking and forgiving human hypocrisy. Which finally brings us to our last approach for this evening. Take a look at number 11. So to appreciate this approach, we have to go back a little bit in time. So remember again, this is in the beginning of Parashas Vayeshev. Vayachalom od chalom acher. This is the second of Yosef's two dreams. Vayisaper oso le'achov. He told it to his brothers. Vayomer hinei chalamti chalom od v'hinei ha'shemesh v'yarech v'achales ha'kochavim mishtachavim li. And remember, in this dream, he has a dream and the sun and the moon and 11 stars are bowing down to him. The Torah relates, Vayisaper el aviv ve'el echov. So Yosef goes ahead and tells over this dream to his father and to his brothers, Vayigar bo aviv. Now, Vayigar bo aviv literally means what? His father scolded him. His father scolded him that Yaakov Avinu is upset about this dream. Vayomer lo, and he said to him, Ma chalom hazeh shechalamta. Yaakov says to Yosef, what are you talking? What is this dream? Havona avo ani v'imcha v'achecha l'shtacha v'oslacha arza. Are you saying that me, your mother, and your brothers are going to bow down to you? So leave aside the fact that his mother's dead. Rachel Imenu already died. Leave that aside for just a little bit. Yaakov Avinu seems to be perturbed. He seems to be upset about this dream. Are you saying that I, your father, and your mother, whether it's a reference to Rachel, or whether it's a reference to Bilhah, or to Zilpah, or to Leah, whoever it is, are you saying the whole family is going to bow down to you? So look at number 12. Immediately after, so remember again, number 11 is Parak Lama Zayin, chapter 37, verses 9 through 10. Okay, now remember, Pasuk Yud Aleph, which is the verse that I don't have on the page over here, says, the brothers also hated him even more after the second dream. Now go to number 12. Vayelchu, so immediately afterwards, what happens? Now after the both dreams, Vayelchu Echav Liros Yisron Aviyem B'Shechem. So the brothers go out to shepherd their flock in Shechem. Vayomer Yisrael al Yosef, Halo Achecha Ro'im B'Shechem, L'cho V'eshalachecha Aleihem Vayomer Lohineini. So Yaakov even says to Yosef, listen, Yosef, your brothers are shepherding the flocks in Shechem. Do me a favor. Go out and check on them. Go out and check on them. Vayomer lo lechna re'e shlom echecha v'shlom atzon v'ashivinu davar v'yishalecheyu me'eme chevron v'yavo shchema. So again, follow the progression over here. Yosef has both dreams. First dream, Yaakov doesn't say anything. Second dream, Yaakov even gets upset, scolds Yosef. Immediately afterwards, brothers go out to shepherd the flocks. Yaakov says to Yosef, in the last conversation that father and son have for 22 years, this is the last moment they see each other. Yaakov says to Yosef, you know what? Your brothers are out shepherding the flock. Why don't you go check on them in Shechem? Writes Rabbi Sachs. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs has an incredible insight here. And he writes in his book, Covenant and Conversation, number 13, immediately afterwards we read of Jacob sending Joseph alone to his brothers. It was there at the meeting far from home that they plotted to kill him, lowered him into a pit, and eventually sold him as a slave. Joseph had many years to reflect on that episode, that his brothers were hostile to him, he knew. But surely Jacob knew this as well. In which case, why did he send Joseph to them? Did Jacob not contemplate the possibility that they might do him harm? Did he not know the dangers of sibling rivalry? Did he not at least contemplate the possibility that by sending Yosef to them, he was risking Yosef's life? So Rabbi Sachs is something amazing. That Yosef thinks about how these events unfolded. How did Yosef wind up in Shechem? How did he wind up in the clutches of his brothers? His father. His father told him to go. And Yosef thinks about this. Why would my father have told me to go to my brothers? My father knew how much they hated me. My father saw how much they hated me. Why would my father send me to an isolated place where I'm at the mercy of my brothers? No one knew this better from personal experience, meaning no one knew about sibling rivalry better than Yaakov. Recall that Jacob himself had been forced to leave home because his brother Esau threatened to kill him. Once he discovered that Jacob had taken his blessing, recall too that when Jacob was about to meet Esau again, after an interval of 22 years, he was in great fear and distress, believing that his brother would try to kill him. That fear provoked one of the greatest crises of Yaakov's life. So Jacob knew better than anyone else in Genesis that hate can lead to killing, that sibling rivalry carries with it the risk of fratricide. Yet,
Yaakov sent Yosef to his other sons, knowing that they were jealous of him and hated him. Joseph presumably knew these facts. What else could he conclude as he reflected on the events that led up to his sale as a slave? That Jacob had deliberately placed him in danger. Why? Because of the immediately prior event when Yosef had told his father that the sun and moon, his father and mother, were down with him. Turn the page sideways. This angered Jacob, and Yosef knew it. His father had rebuked him. It was outrageous to suggest that his parents would prostrate themselves before him. It was wrong to imagine it, all the more so to say it. Besides, who was the moon? Joseph's mother, the great love of Yaakov's life, was dead. Presumably then he was referring to Leah. But this very mention of the sun and moon and 11 stars must have brought back to his father the pain of Rachel's death. Joseph knew he had provoked his father's wrath. What else could he conclude but that Jacob had deliberately put his life at risk? Rabbi Sacks says something absolutely, I think it's earth-shattering. This idea that Yosef doesn't understand how the events unfold. Only as he gets older, he begins to put these pieces together. It doesn't make sense. I tell my dreams over to my father. Dad gets really angry. Why does Dad get angry? The truth is, again, it could be a variety of things. It reminds him of Rachel's death. He's upset that I'm talking about my father and my mother bowing down to me. And then right after that, he tells me to go check on my brothers, knowing that my brothers are filled with animosity and hatred for me. It must be that what? That my father ultimately was delivering me directly into the hands of my brothers. Take a look at number 14. And interestingly enough, he then goes on, Vayikra Yosef, Eshema Barchor Menashe. Yosef, remember again, fast forwarding a little bit in the story. Yosef goes ahead and names his firstborn Menashe, Kinashani Elokim Eskol Amali, Veskol Beisavi. So what's interesting is it's always bothered me that, remember again, the Pasuk says that God has allowed me to forget all of my suffering, all of my trials and travails, and my entire father's home. That Yosef wants to forget his suffering, we understand. Why does he want to forget his father's home? Again, writes Rabbi Sacks, uppermost in Joseph's mind was the desire to forget the past. Not just his brother's conduct towards him, but all my father's house. Why so? If not that he associated all of my trouble, not just with his siblings, but also with his father Jacob. Yosef believed that his father had deliberately put him at his brother's mercy because, angered by the second dream, he no longer wanted contact with the son he had once loved. That is why he never sent a message to Jacob that he was still alive. Meaning, what Rabbi Sacks is asking over here, which is a question that everybody asks on this story, which is why Yosef became viceroy of Egypt. Why didn't he send an aerogram? You know, why doesn't he send something back to Canaan? Hey, Dad, just wanted to let you know I'm alive. Why does he never send word back to Yaakov that he's alive? And writes Rabbi Sacks, do you know why? Because Yosef assumed that Yaakov wanted him out of the picture in the same way that his brothers did. He assumed that it was a family plan to get Yosef out of the family. My brothers went to Shechem. My father conveniently sent me to check on my brothers in Shechem. Once I get to Shechem, it was an ambush. My father set me up. He sent me into the ambush, not wanting anything to do with me anymore. And therefore, why should I write? Why should I write? Better off to forget, better off to move on. There's nothing to be gained ultimately again by connecting because my father has rejected me. Look at number 16. Yes. Okay.
No, but the thing is, he wasn't sent.
Yaakov sent Yosef to check on his brothers. He sent them to check on his brothers. The location is irrelevant. He sent them to check on his brothers.
Where?
Who cares?
No, because he sent them here, but he knew that.
It doesn't matter. He was sending them to check on the brothers. So the fact that Yaakov thought they were in Shechem, they were in Dothan, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, he was sent. Why is he sending me? Why is he sending me to check on people who are overtly hostile to me?
Maybe he was testing
him. Okay. All right. Or maybe not. Good. Look at number 16. Look at number 16. So now watch. So just follow. We're not finished yet. So just follow this through. So now what happened? Fast forward to Vayigash a little bit.
So what happens? Now again, remember, so Yosef's lived all of these years. And again, I want to point out, this is a very novel approach. And the truth is, it's a very uncomfortable approach. Because the thought that Yosef would actually think that his father was somehow in collusion with the brothers is disturbing on so many levels. But at the same time, if from Yosef's perspective, if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. Why else? Again, remember, it's not like Yaakov Avinu was unaware of the animosity between the brothers. Yaakov Avinu was very fully aware. In fact, Yaakov Avinu even apparently shared in some of the animosity. Sends me all alone, Yosef, all alone to my brothers. Okay, to Shechem, to Dothan. Son, the fact that he got the location wrong perhaps does not change the fact that he still sent his brother, still sent Yosef to be alone with the brothers. Never reaches out because I figured my father doesn't want anything to do with me. Watch this, 16. Where's the turning point? Beginning of this week's parsha. Vayomer Avinu. So this is now Yehuda speaking. This is now, remember, Binyamin is about to be taken captive by Yosef. So now Yehuda's talking. He's giving a little bit of background. Vayomer Avinu Shuvu Shivru Lalama Atocha. Remember again, the brothers come back the first time with food from Egypt, with their money returned in their bags, and Shimon is in jail. So they want to bring Binyamin back to Egypt because that's the only way they can get Shimon out of jail. Yaakov Avinu says, no, you're not taking Binyamin. What happens? The food runs out. When the food runs out, the brothers have to go back to Egypt. That's when Yaakov says to the sons, go back to Egypt, get us some food. So then when Dad asked us to go back, this is again Yehuda talking to Yosef. When Father asked us to go back to Egypt to get more food, I told my father what you told us, Yosef, meaning Viceroy. You told us that we can't get any more food until we bring the youngest son with us. So listen to this. Yehuda says to Yosef, this is before Yosef revealed his identity. My father, your servant, speaking to Yosef, unrevealed Yosef as of yet, said to me, Atem yidatem, you know what our father said? You know, Kishnayim yaldali ishti, that my wife Rachel gave birth to two sons. Vayetze ha'echad me'iti, one of them left me. Va'omar ach tarof taraf v'lo re'isi v'adhena. And he was torn apart by a wild animal, and I have not seen him until this day. Do you know what that means, by the way? V'lo re'isi v'adhena, I haven't seen him until, obviously, if he's killed by a wild animal, you haven't seen him until now. What does it mean, v'lo re'isi v'adhena? And not a day goes by that I don't think about him. Not a day goes by that I don't have a mental image of him. Not a day goes by that I don't pine to just have him in my presence. And now you want to take Binyamin also. Something terrible is going to happen to him. So what does Yosef hear out of the unsolicited words of Yehuda? What does he hear? That his father still loves him. That his father still thinks about him. That he got the whole story wrong. My father never stopped loving me. My father never stopped thinking about me. My father never stopped missing me for one day. I thought he was in collusion with the brothers. I was so mistaken. Look at Rabbi Sacks writes in number 17. At that moment, Joseph realized that his fear that his father had rejected him was unwarranted. On the contrary, he had been bereft when Yosef did not return. He believed that he had been torn to pieces, killed by a wild animal. His father still loved him, still grieved for him. Against this background, we can better understand Yosef's reaction to this disclosure. What happens after Yosef hears this? Then Joseph can no longer control himself. This is number one on your sheet. Because before all the attendants, he cried out, have everyone leave my presence. So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? What is Yosef HaTzadik saying? Now again, according to my text, what do those words mean? Ani Yosef ha'od avi chai. He doesn't say Avinu. He doesn't say our father. You know why he doesn't say our father? Because you know what he's really asking? Ha'od avi. Is my father, is that relationship still alive? Are you telling me that it's still there? I thought that that relationship was dead. I thought that relationship was torn to pieces. I thought that relationship was given up on long ago. Ani Yosef. I am still the boy. I am still the child. You know, many a psychologist, Freud was the one who made this most prominent, that the relationship that we have with our parents ultimately are the most important relationships we have in life and very much forge almost every other part of our persona identity. I am Yosef. I am still the little boy. What does every single child want? The approval of their parents. I am still, a lot of adults also want it. I am Yosef. I am Yosef. I am still the child who wants more than anything to have a relationship with my father. Ha'od avichai? Is my father, does Yaakov still want to be my father? Are you telling me that he wants to be a father, is that still alive within him? Does he still have those feelings towards me? Yosef's first thought is not about Yehuda or Binyamin, but about Jacob. A doubt he had harbored for 22 years had turned out to be unfounded. Hence his first question is, my father, does Yaakov really still have that desire to be my father? And finally, number 18, Rabbi Sachs writes, Yosef did not communicate with his father because he believed his father no longer wanted to see him or hear from him. His father had terminated their relationship. This was a reasonable inference from the fact, as Yosef knew them, he could not have known that Jacob still loved him, that his brothers had deceived their father by showing him Joseph's blood-stained cloak, and that his father mourned for him, refusing to be comforted. We know these facts because the Torah tells us. But Yosef, far away in another land, serving as a slave, could not have known. This places the story in a completely new and tragic light. So what comes out, according to Rabbi Sachs, in this last approach, is that when Yosef HaTzadik says, Ani Yosef, ha'od avichai, there's 22 years of misperceptions and misconceived and misunderstandings that had built up 2 decades, assuming that his father no longer hated him, no longer loved him, assuming that his father in reality despised him, assuming that his father actually sent him to be ambushed by his brothers. And now he hears Yehuda say, your father mourns for you and talks about you and misses you every single day, brings Yosef's entire world crashing down. He can no longer restrain himself at all. Ani Yosef, all of these years, I'm just little Yosef, yearning for a relationship with my father. Are you telling me now, ha'od avichai, that my father is still alive? An incredible insight with a very important message. Because what the Torah essentially is conveying to us is that so many of us have life relationships that have multiple levels of misunderstandings. And very often, when you don't take the time to work through your misunderstandings and your misconceptions within your relationships, they build on each other. And sometimes years, decades go by with misunderstandings, misconceptions, misperceptions building on each other, leading people to believe certain things about how the other feels about them or doesn't feel about them. Where the Torah is telling us, amazing, What would have happened if Yosef and Yaakov would have had a conversation about the dream? Instead of Yaakov, just simply getting angry and Yosef just simply walking away, imagine had Yosef asked his father, Dad, I'm just telling you what I saw in the dream. What is it? What is it that, Greg, I know you're upset. Hold it in. I know you're upset. I know that something I said bothered you. But Father, let's talk about it. This is my Simba Cholim. This happens all the time where people have disagreements, people have fallouts, people have differences of opinion. And instead of engaging in dialogue and putting everything on the table and trying to work out those differences, people continue to walk through life with their misunderstandings. And what could sometimes begin as a very small misunderstanding ultimately snowballs into something much more significant, much more dramatic, that leads the individuals within the relationship with a fundamentally flawed perception about how the other feels about them. This story is one of many stories in Sefer Bereishis where the complete tragic component of the story is a fundamental lack of communication. We have seen that again in virtually every single one of the matriarchal families. There's always been some episode that could have been so easily resolved, maybe not easily resolved, but that could have been resolved, or at least could have been approached or tackled with just a greater degree of communication and a greater degree of dialogue. So if we bring this all together, what comes out from this little phrase of ha'od avichai, we learn some incredible life lessons from it. Of course, again, we learn pshat in the pasuk in terms of what Yosef HaTzadik is actually asking his brothers. But we also learn from here a number of things. We learn from here, number one, that when talking to people, we have to be very careful how we structure our words. It's not just enough to say what's on your mind, but rather you have to make sure that when you say what's on your mind, you have to kind of plan and contemplate how those words are going to be heard by the other, how those words will be understood by the other. Be careful to frame your words in a way that will not just express what you mean to say, but will be heard in a way that conveys the message that you intend to convey. Lesson number two, HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts sin. God accepts the fact that we make mistakes. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks us to be exceptionally vigilant about is the avoidance of hypocrisy. We can't be, as Chazal say, echad bapeh ve'echad b'lev. We can't say one thing and believe another thing, or say one thing and act in a different way. We have to make sure that our actions and what we do in life somehow align with our ideals and beliefs. That we sin, that we're human. But to be hypocritical, to live a life of hypocrisy, to live a dual life, to have a disconnect between the mouth and the heart, or the heart and the hands, or the body and thoughts, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm sorry, that's an unforgivable offense. And lesson number three, that in our relationships in life, whatever relationship it may be, there are always misunderstandings. And sometimes if those misunderstandings are left unresolved, they could lead to incredible hurt and incredible pain. They can lead to people feeling abandoned, feeling forsaken, feeling unloved, even when that is not the intents of the party. Nasa Avos Simla Baran Torah teaches us a story like this to teach us that when there is a falling out, when there is a disagreement, when there is a misunderstanding within a relationship, the best approach is always to tackle it head on, put all the issues on the table, and hopefully spare everyone involved feelings of hurt and feelings of rejection. All right, we'll stop over here for tonight. There is Mariv in the Beis Medrash beginning in 3 minutes. Greg, what were you going to say? The difficulty that I had with that was